Osio, Osiju. Hello, my relatives. Good to see you here. I bring you greetings from the Kituwa Band of Cherokee, my people, from Colorado chapter of the American Indian Movement, of which I'm a part, and from Gwarthy Las, otherwise known as Leonard Peltier, who tonight, as I speak to you, continues to sit in a cage to federal prison at Leavenworth, Kansas. Not for anything anyone, including even his prosecutor, at any point in the past 20 years has been prepared to say they believe he actually did, but rather as a symbol of the arbitrary ability of the federal government of the United States to repress the legitimate aspirations to liberation of indigenous people within its claimed boundaries. And note the emphasis there is on claim. There's a difference between a claim and a reality. And that difference is something we'll be talking about a bit tonight. And that difference accounts for what it is that Leonard was struggling against to put him in that cage. Put him in a cage to send a message. And that message is, if you stand on your rights, if you actually struggle for, exercise your rights, there's costs and consequences. And I got about 4,000 emails over the last, 90 days reaffirming that point. Of course, I believe in free speech, but with free speech come consequences. Well, hot news flash, all you constitutional scholars out there, if there's consequences, those are costs. And if there's costs, it ain't free. I got a little list of things they asked me to address tonight, beginning with my case. Well, I'll speak to that. I'm probably unique in the country at this very moment. I'm probably not going to stay that way, but at this moment, I'm probably the only academic that two state governors, three legislatures, one board of regents, and those weasels that form the administration of my own institution have called upon to be fired. I've actually got legislative votes to that effect. I'm actually a laboratory case for a new set of techniques that arise out of but are not synonymous with the old McCarthyite impulse, the notion of a purge. And I'm going to begin there, and I'll probably end the talk with this as well, but in somewhat different ground. Over a 160-day period in Colorado, centering on Denver, which is not exactly my hometown, but that's the major metropolitan area. In that 60-day period, I had 200 hits, including 11 front-page stories in the Denver Post, and over 200 in the Rocky Mountain News, and very nearly 200 in the Boulder Daily Camera, and another probably 60 in the Colorado Daily. And as capitalist Silverman, Peter Boyle, and Gunny Bob put it on Clear Channel, all Churchill, all the time. I know I have the distinction of being the only academic in the country that has my own dedicated program on Fox News during that period. And I want to thank Bill O'Reilly sincerely for sacrificing his program and retitling it the Ward Churchill Factor for 31 straight days. Actually, you could say Bill is why I'm here. And he hasn't yet asked for a kickback. Of course, he charges a little more than I do and probably therefore doesn't need it. But that's the laboratory case. Can you, with sheer media concentration coupled to the posturing of political power for a particular set of purposes, which include diversions in the case of the Colorado governor, Mr. Family Values, who needed to take the heat off his wife leaving him because she caught him in flagrant delicto with a staff member who was serving as his mistress at the time. I guess that's why she was paid. There was something in there about misexpenditure of taxpayers' dollars, but he didn't want to talk about it in that connection. And Boyle called them smoking babies, the two illegitimate children he's reputed to have fathered since he's been in the governor's office, bearing the standard of the Christian right. obviously he needed something to take attention off himself, and this pretty well did the trick. So you can see what his vestiture of interest might have been, aside from a straight, what do they call that, Republican agenda? Well, if you could take that kind of concentration and accomplish what they used to call in the FBI neutralization of targets simply in and of itself, the media blitz coupled to political posturing would accomplish the desired result and you wouldn't need to go any further. Well, I'm pleased to announce that it failed. I'm still standing. Department's still standing, and they flat run out of steam. All of a sudden, well, what do you think about this runaway bride? Yeah. Michael Jackson's what? I mean, Michael Jackson ended up subsidizing my entire defense campaign for the pleasure of having me take him off the front page for a protracted period of time. Yeah, it didn't work. That's the upside of things. Downside is, these are not unintelligent beings. I'm not sure whether I want really to dignify them with the term people, but the beings that orchestrated this do learn from their mistakes, and they overplayed their hand. This was too much concentration too fast. Even O'Reilly's faithful, these weren't critics. This was his own regular viewers were writing emails by the end of the third week of this saying, hey, lighten up. There's other things happening in the world here. And they kept making mistakes because they had not done their homework before the fact, shooting from the hip. This will not be repeated in the same form. They will use the same technique, but they will have learned from these lessons and target other people, and they will probably target other people more effectively than they have targeted me. Having failed on lynching for speech, they've now slid over to something that sounds much more weighty and dignified. We've determined that he actually had a right to say. Well, there was a question about that in the first place. We couldn't find the line that he crossed. That's because there are none. There's no lines on speech beyond which you're not allowed to go other than into the area of criminal sanction, and the investigative body would not be an ad hoc committee. In some university, it would be the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And I'm reasonably familiar with those guys. And if they had a sedition case or a treason case or a material support to terrorism case or any other kind of criminal case that they could have brought on the basis of what I said, I would be duly sitting in a cell and awaiting trial. That was never part of the deal. So there are no lines to cross in terms of speech content by a faculty member or a just plain straight-up citizen, for that matter, in terms of offering a political analysis of circumstances and events. There are lines beyond which governors of states, legislatures, and so forth, in intervening in the public discourse, they're not to go, and they've crossed every one of them. However, since they're writing the laws, they don't criminally sanction that sort of line crossing. They don't even lose their jobs, although, you know, on the basis of competency, which was the issue that the governor raised around me, I'd return a compliment and say on that basis he should have been fired long ago. And since he hangs his hat on moral virtue, well, you take it from there, dot, dot, dot. So now they're investigating whether to investigate allegations launched by eminent scholars that I have plagiarized myself. True story. Pull down John Lovell's essay and see what he actually said. Distorting sources. Well, Lovell said, I wrote the pieces that I'm accused of plagiarizing, which ain't plagiarism. To accuse me of plagiarism based on what he said is a distortion of source on a major scale. Therefore, I've filed or will file on Monday. I don't know whether the paperwork went in yet. Academic misconduct charges on my accusers in the university. If we're going to play, we're going to play. Okay? Distortion of sources, plagiarism, and misrepresenting circumstances with regard to the Fort Clark incident of 1836, whether or not the Army actually intended smallpox to break out among the Mandans, kill about 100,000 Indians, and whether there were actually 100,000 Indians to kill. These are the weighty issues. Oh yeah, I forgot. Are Ojibwe's matriarchal or not? And the crusher. Now, here's the real research interest question. Am I an Indian? Am I an Indian? Well, some real interesting email in this, which I'm actually compiling, published with a little, be fairly short, because I'm just going to do selected. They get redundant after a while. Collection of emails out of the roughly 18,000 received since the end of January. There's these two real neat batches. One goes something like this. I'll give you selected highlights. Shivington should have finished the job. For those of you out there unfamiliar with American history, John Shivington was the Methodist minister turned volunteer cavalry colonel who headed up the Sand Creek Massacre under the premise that nits make lice. A nit, for those of you who are not familiar with biology, are baby lice. In other words, killer babies. Shivington should have finished the job. He didn't kill you all. Or another one, Hitler picked the wrong people. He should have started with your great-grandparents. Work it out from there. Oh, I've got a whole pile. Real cute ones. And then on the other hand, when they're not engaging in this kind of invective, based upon my presumptive Indianness, they're saying I'm not an Indian at all. That's serious insult, you phony wannabe Indian. And these are all white guys. So what is it they're saying I am if I'm not Indian? The worst thing they can think to call me is a white guy? Good God. What kind of self-concept afflicts these reactionary beings?